I'm Lynn Scherr filling in for John Hockenberry here with Celeste. And there is no way to lead into this story gracefully. In Afghanistan, a young couple has been executed for the crime of love. The couple had been planning to elope, and for the first time since their fall from power 9 years ago, the Taliban ordered a public execution by stoning this past weekend. Through a loudspeaker, members of an Afghan village were summoned to the local bazaar on Sunday, where the condemned couple came before them. The first stone was thrown by a Taliban fighter. Then the large crowd of hundreds of people followed suit. Even family members joined in. The execution was just the latest in a string of harsh punishments for social crimes by the former regime, which include lashing and amputation. Not only are some in the country calling them punishment appropriate, but a group of 350 religious scholars is asking for a continuation of these types of sentences under Sharia law. We are joined now by John Burns, London Bureau Chief for our partner, The New York Times. And John won a Pulitzer Prize for his reporting on Afghanistan's Taliban regime back in the 1990s. Welcome, John.
It's a pleasure.
John, I have to say, it feels as if nothing has changed. You reported on the Taliban and these kinds of practices long before most of us had even heard about them. Does this tell you that we're sort of going back to the way things were before the U.S. and the other troops got in there?
Yes, when I read Rod Nordland's story in the New York Times yesterday for the first time on the web today in the newspaper, it struck me as being an almost complete, perfect facsimile of a similar stoning that I wrote about in Kandahar in 1997, which was just as the Taliban took control across Afghanistan. It's a very ominous sign because it suggests that the Taliban, who only as recently as 2 or 3 years ago were, if one can call anything about the Taliban officially, were officially telling their fighters and their commanders to ease up on punishments of this kind because it alienated people, now feel confident enough with their growing presence across Afghanistan to return to their old ways.
And what are the implications for power sharing at this point, if that's the case? Because Afghan officials have been trying to reconcile with the Taliban leaders, and there's been a lot of talk on this side saying, look, we're not fighting the Taliban, we have to get along with them.
Well, of course, there are, as is widely recognized, there are extreme and there are more moderate Taliban, and there are a lot of impediments, in my view, to any kind of reconciliation, political reconciliation with the more moderate Taliban, not least of which is that they will then be in great danger from the more extreme Taliban. But this does point up a further impediment, which is that the social, economic and political programs of the Taliban, even the moderate Taliban, are a country mile or more away from anything that could be construed as conforming with the Afghan constitution, which is, of course, the yardstick that the coalition and President Karzai have set for any kind of accommodation with the moderate Taliban.
And what about President Karzai? Does he have any power to stop this kind of thing?
None at all, I would think. No more than he has the power to eliminate the Taliban from Afghanistan at the moment. And that, of course, depends far more on the coalition forces than it does on his own forces.
Do you think that might have anything to do with why this execution, this public execution, was ordered, to sort of an in-your-face way of pointing out they've got the power and President Karzai doesn't?
Yes, although I doubt that is the thought uppermost in the mind of these people. In order to understand an event like this, you have to understand that we are gazing across a gap of 1,000 years, really, when we talk to and deal with and contemplate the sorts of actions that took place in Kunduz province in this stoning and that I wrote about in Kandahar now 13 years ago. At that time, I went to see the number two in the Taliban. He is the chief of staff, if you will, to Mullah Muhammad Omar, who remains the head of the Taliban, living in fugitive exile in Pakistan. Now, I spent a long afternoon in the palace in Kandahar talking to this man, who I have to say was personally very charming and fed me glasses of pomegranate juice, one arm, victim of the Soviet occupation of Afghanistan when he was a Mujahideen. And he looked astonished, absolutely astonished, not offended, but just astonished at any question I asked him, which was based on a Western liberal scheme of human rights. And in effect, when I asked him, why do you inflict these punishments, not in effect, what he said was, why not? Because in his world, a world where there has been no enlightenment, these things seem to be absolutely natural. And the Taliban will tell you is that all they're doing is they're codifying, if you will, the law, the culture, the codes of that have prevailed in Afghanistan, over 1,000 years.
Over, as you point out, more than 1,000 years. And what is the impact on the citizens in Afghanistan when something like this happens? Admittedly, this was in a northern province. We got the news. Clearly, they got the news, and I think that's part of the point. Does it offend people, or do they obey the law better?
Well, you know, it's a puzzle. If you tried something like this in the one truly cosmopolitan or the city in Afghanistan, or the only city that could remotely be described as cosmopolitan, which is Kabul, I think the overwhelming reaction would be a negative one. And I saw executions in Kabul under the Taliban, and there was a sullen silence in the football stadium when they, for example, on that occasion,
yes, we saw those pictures,
by automatic rifle fire, a woman who had been found guilty by a Sharia court of adultery. But the situation is very different when you go to Kandahar or to Kunduz, which are not in the least cosmopolitan, and where, in the case that I wrote about, and as I see in the case that Rod Nordland writes about today, the crowd apparently was happy.
Indeed, they were very, 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 and very troubling to those of us on the other side here. John Burns, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, foreign correspondent for our partner, The New York Times. Thanks so much.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.